Today's podcast, Doug Peterson. What happened with the tank game? What happened with Nick Foles and Carson Wentz? And is he going to start coaching again? We'll do an open on this week in the NFL. And our first ever 2021 Bill Tom Legacy Rankings. We'll update those. We do a little on local news and life advice that goes way too long. It's the Ryan Russillo podcast presented by FanDuel. Take a shot at betting the NBA with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub. Filter by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same-game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting the Explore page and the Pulse and bet live same-game parlays for every NBA game. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, official partner of the NBA. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available. And listen to the end of the episode for additional details. Must be 21 and older and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease, and the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.
NFL Week 10 in the books. Your headline is... The Green Bay Packers, 17-0 against Seattle. That was a grind, huh? I mean, the whole time you're like, how is Green Bay not winning this game by more back-to-back end zone picks? Pump for Jamal Adams press conference. It'll be 2 hours long on his pick in the end zone. But Green Bay right now is 8-2, 4-0 at home, and the number one seed in the NFC. Remember, the only team that gets the bye week in the playoffs, that's the one seed. Let's look at a couple other factors here for Green Bay. Their remaining strength of schedule is 26th because their division, second best team in the division is Minnesota Vikings, but they're 4-5. They could argue a bunch of different wins, losses, but as we tell you, you can't listen to the coach after a disappointing season and talk about all the one score games they lost, one possession games that they lost, because that's basically the league for the most part, except for the horrible teams. But Minnesota has a real valid. Did you see the stat yesterday? Minnesota is the only team in the NFL that has had a 7-point or more lead in every single game this season. So Minnesota's had some that could have gone their way, but I don't think you can also turn it into saying, hey, we should be 8-1. You can't count every close loss as a win by ignoring every close win that also stays as a win, right? You can't do that. All right, so we know the division isn't tough. The rest of the schedule isn't tough. They got a couple teams coming up, though, that there's some better teams. They have like 2 games where you're like, okay, that's going to be tough. We'll see what happens. I still think Arizona should have won that game, but they didn't. All right. So the bigger part of this is the defense. We realize that Aaron Rodgers is going to dominate the headlines because of everything that's gone on with Aaron Rodgers the last couple of weeks. All right. This is not a surprise. But what's been weird is that the rest of the Packers' success has drafted off the Aaron Rodgers vaccination, non-vaccinated headlines. Defensively, some of the metrics aren't crazy, all right, but they've been getting better. But then if you look at some of the opposing numbers, just straight, you know, more of the traditional stuff, yardage and points, they're number 3 in opponents' points, and they're number 3 in opponents' yards per play. So this defense is stepping up, which has always been kind of my criticism of Rodgers, the quarterback, in that he's so mad about the situation, and now it looks like they are geared up to have a really nice defense through the run here of the colder months, and if they're at home. But at the NFC at the top, like, I still think you can throw those 5 teams in a hat. One will not be healthy. They're going to have a big injury. You know, one of these other teams is going to stay clean. They might be better. They just might be healthier. But whether it's the Packers, Cardinals, Cowboys, Bucks, Rams, it's those 5. Even though the Saints are the 6th seed as of right now at 5-4, I don't think you put them in that group. I don't think we need more explaining on that one. But it's those 5. But right now the Packers are ahead of all of them, and they're doing it with their defense. There's something people say when it comes to college football that drives me absolutely fucking crazy. And people say it all the time, and they're going to keep saying it. And I'd love for people to stop saying it, because when you really think of it, it's not that insightful. But people have been saying it forever. And it is this. When you have a college football team lose a game that they're not supposed to lose, what does the analyst always say, right? Be like, well, you know, 18, 22-year-olds, you never know what you're going to get. So what does that mean about when the Bills lose to the Jags? What about when Baltimore gets smoked by Miami on a primetime game? Or Tampa goes into Washington and loses to the football team and gives up one of the biggest drives we've seen from a team all season long? We'll get to that in a second. What does that mean? Like, imagine if an NFL studio analyst were sitting behind the desk and they come to halftime, the good team's getting smoked to the bad team or whatever. It can even be postgame. Doesn't matter, right? Good team unexpectedly loses the bad team. Tampa was a 10-point favorite, 9.5, depending where you saw the number, and they lose this game. Imagine a guy going, you know, you get a bunch of 28 to 32-year-olds, you never know what's going to happen. Because it's the same thing. It's the same thing. It is this game. We are convinced because the scores are not worth 1 point, but 6 points, that somehow like winning 21-7 is the dominant game when it's really 3-1, all right? So you'll see a team get smoked. And really what it comes down to is like the possessions are so fragile that bad teams can hang with good teams. That's maybe why we do love this sport, is that you still feel like a chance, you have a chance on any of these Saturdays or Sundays for something to happen. Not so much in college, but more so in the NFL, because the talent disparity is so much greater depending on the schools that we're talking about here. But it happens, all right? Really good teams lose to bad teams for no other reason than it just sort of happens. But whenever it's in college, we blame the age group. And no one would ever go, yeah, you know, a bunch of grown men with mortgages, a couple kids, you never know what you're going to get on a Sunday. It doesn't make any sense. And neither does this win, but again, they happen. Heinicke was perfect in this game. I mean, seriously, he was perfect. And Heinicke's kind of one of those, hey, we've got this guy, this is great. It's like having the 20th best point guard in the NBA where you go, hey, our guy's actually not that bad and it's a really deep position, but we're not going to do anything until we get one of those guys that's a lot better at the position. And the best part of this is kind of like, if you're a quarterback and you're trying to describe yourself, you go, I'm not so much Heinicke, but I'm not so much Cousins. Like wherever Cousins is on the safety thing, although Cousins at times can be a little bit more adventurous. Not all the time. Look, we've heard my Cousins dissertation, so we don't need to do that again. But I just think of like this, the spectrum of quarterbacks. Like Heinicke doesn't care. And it, sometimes it looks awesome. He's kind of like shorter Ryan Fitzpatrick. And where Fitzpatrick goes from team to team, it's like, yeah, we get you a few starts. And some nights it's going to look awesome. And then some nights you're going to be like, oh, this is why he's on his fifth different team in 5 years. And Heinicke stepped in. And I'm telling you, that drive, 19 plays, 80 yards for 10 minutes and 21 seconds. They go for on fourth. They go up 30-19. That is one of the single best drives I've seen as far as like importance and opponent. Tampa's a good defense. I mean, they're not all-timer here, but they're still a good defense. And in that spot, Washington just put it together. They just went right down the field as slow as you possibly could. I think the best way to describe Heinicke Cousins, like I would look at it this way. Cousins is still talking about that spring break to senior frogs, or is it senior frogs? Heinicke goes to Tulum. Cousins is like, I like corn, but they can be a little hard. But Creed brings it. No skips. Heinicke's like, I saw Pantera when I was in high school and I smoked cigarettes at the show. And Cousins is probably like, remember that one time? Remember that one time we tapped a keg at our apartment? And Heineke's like, I own a small piece of a dive bar in Delaware. Okay, this Washington loss plays perfectly into, for the first time in a long time, yes, you guessed it, an updated legacy rankings for Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. I think last year it was close. It was too tough to call it, but we leaned Tom because of the Super Bowl. So I think Bill ended up number two to Tom's number one. And I haven't been doing it. The IT department over here, we haven't been crunching the numbers as much this season with it because we like to keep things moving. But I just felt like it was time, right? So you've got Tampa losing to the Rams on the road, the Saints, which didn't make a ton of sense last week, and then Washington. You go, all right, what is the lesson here? What's going on? What's the chess move, right? What's that other thing? Is Tom doing this? Are they losing these games so that it's a teaching moment? Is that perhaps what's going on? I don't think you're going to rule it out. Not with a leader like Brady. But then at the other end of it, you go, okay, what do you do with Bill? Overhauled the roster defensively, spent like crazy finally in free agency. some of the draft picks. Not quite sure yet, except for one, and that's Mac Jones. They get him in the middle of the first round. And the reason why I think you got to go Bill 1, Tom 2 is not because of the Washington loss, but if Bill actually did this, and this is maybe what he did and what he knew he was going to do the entire time. Did Saban tell Bill years ago, hey, this Mac Jones guy went available, middle of the first round, grab him. Ignore all the other quarterbacks in this class. Because Mac was close to flawless in that game. And on the other side of it, like we're not going to do a Baker part of this because this is Bill Tom legacy rankings. If Baker's hurt, that'd be probably a good thing. And clearly he's hurt, but there's also a lot of maybe clearly Baker isn't the guy. Think about this move by Bill. Think about this chess move that only Micah Parsons would understand. How about this? You get rid of the best quarterback of all time for a guy whose floor might be the second best quarterback of all time, and it only costs you a 2020 season where people weren't even leaving the house anyway. That's what we could be looking at. Because I think Mac Jones' floor is number two GOAT. I think that's a safe floor. And so that's 40 years of GOATs with 1 year in between. So Bill number one, Tom number two.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease, and the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.
Doug Peterson, it's going to be good to catch up with our guy here, coach of the NFL, played a bunch of years. And looking at it, Doug, I was going over the resume. This is going to be the first year for you away from football since, man, like Pop Warner, like how long has it been since you haven't been doing anything with football?
Yeah. Ryan, first of all, thanks for having me on. And it's been a long time. I think it's been over 30 plus years going all the way back to my high school days of doing football, right? Doing something in the football world. And then, of course, you know, my college days and playing in the NFL. It's been a long time, you know, since I've had a substantial break like this. And I'll tell you something. This has been a good time just to kind of step away and recharge and just kind of freshen up and see what, you know, see what the future holds.
What are you like when you watch games now on Sunday?
I'm interested and I'm not interested. You know, it's kind of funny. It's kind of funny because I always use this phrase, are you committed or are you interested with my teams? And that's, of course, when I was coaching and in it and everything. But, you know, I look at it, obviously I look at the games now and I watch a ton of football and, you know, I look at it from a fan's perspective just a little bit, but I'm still watching offensive formations. I'm watching where, you know, like the game, you know, last night with the Chiefs on and where's Coach Reed putting Tyreek Hill? Where is he putting, you know, Travis Kelce and guys like that? So I'm looking at all these matchups now, you know, and of course my wife is sitting there and she's watching the ball and how a fan would typically watch the games, but I'm watching it more like a coach and how's the defense lining up? You know, what are they, a nickel personnel, dime personnel? How are they doing this? How are they doing that? And that's kind of how I've been coached, obviously, but that's how I'm watching the games now. So I'm a little bit of a fan, but I'm more of a coach watching these games.
Is there one team you find yourself wanting to watch more than the others?
Not really. You know, we're down in Florida now, and so we get a lot of the Jacksonville, we get Miami, some of the Tampa Bay stuff, and you know, all of the, of course, those local teams. But you know, I'm just watching what's on. And then I have, you know, my home office is set up where I can watch all the games, you know, on a Monday or Tuesday and just kind of see what are the trends that are going on around the league. How are teams using, you know, again, certain personnel groups and stuff. But I don't watch, you know, a specific team or anything like that.
I guess that I wasn't trying to do that to you, but like if you had mentioned a team that wasn't doing well, then it was like, oh, wait, that's no, why Doug watches good. Those guys. Yeah, he's trying to figure out when he's going to get back into this. I want to go back to the beginning, at least in some of the more prolific playing stuff. How did you end up in Washington State and all the way down in Northeast Louisiana to play ball?
So, you know, I grew up in the state of Washington, up in Ferndale, Washington is where I grew up. My mom and dad and my sister, two younger brothers, you know, that's where we grew up and went to Ferndale High School. And then my dad took a new job my senior year of high school. My dad took a new job in Monroe, Louisiana. And that's where we heard and found out about back then. It was Northeast Louisiana University, which is now University of Louisiana Monroe. And I always wanted to be close to home and, you know, play where my folks could come and watch me play. So I ended up all the way in Monroe, Louisiana from Washington State, cross country, played my college football down there at Louisiana Monroe, and met my wife there in school. So that's kind of home for us. But it was a journey, you know, playing my high school, you know, football up in the state of Washington and then cross country into Louisiana.
Yeah. Fun row, as the locals like to call it.
That's right.
Did you have back then, you know, what are we talking, Pac-10 offers?
Pac-10.
Yeah. Did you have offers out there? Like what was it?
No, I didn't have any offers. I grew up a Husky fan, you know, a University of Washington fan and you know, always wanted to go there and they offered me a walk on, you know, preferred walk on, back in the day. But, I was going to have to be a walk on, you know, in one of the Pac-10 schools then. But Northeast gave me an offer, you know, a scholarship offer. University of Idaho gave me a scholarship offer and decided to play, you know, close to home, which would have been Monroe, Louisiana.
Now, was there ever, you know, a time like, all right, you're playing and you ended up, I don't know what your size was, but you're big. Were you as big then? Did it take you a little longer to fill out?
I was around 6'1", about 185, 188 pounds coming out of high school. I was a little bit smaller. You know, I was tall and skinny, you know, growing up. I was, you know, in that 185 to 187, 188 range, about 6'1" coming out of high school. Yeah.
Okay. Then how big were you when you were done? Because did you know you were getting drafted? Like, were people starting to say, hey, actually, you know, you're putting up numbers here. Like, this is real. You're going
to
get drafted.
Yeah, I got into college. And that's, you know, of course, that started to grow just a little bit. And you know, never really had – I mean, I was in the draft. You know, you remember the draft back in 1991. There were like 14 rounds or some crazy thing. It was only 2 days. It was Saturday and Sunday. The draft lasted forever. But I was at that time, I was about six, I'd grown a little bit coming out, you know, 6'2", 6'2" and a half, maybe around 195 coming out of college at the time. And then by the time I finished playing, I'd grown a little bit more during my time. I was about 6'3", about 225 when I was done playing, you know, in the NFL after it was a length of time. It was about 14 years. You know, playing in the NFL, but I went undrafted. You know, I was an undrafted free agent to the Miami Dolphins and kind of a funny story how I kind of got into the league. Jerry Stripling was a scout for the Dolphins back in the 90s. And he also worked at Northeast Louisiana University prior to me, coming there. And so he was a little bit instrumental in getting me to Northeast Louisiana Monroe. And then he left to become a scout, you know, with the Dolphins. So he kind of followed my career. And as soon as the draft was over that weekend back in 1991, he was the first one to call me and says, hey, we want you to come down and be a, you know, basically a walk on, you know, again, and, you know, be a free agent and get into camp. So he was very instrumental in kind of following my career and got my foot in the door.
Then the coaching career, you know, goes while you end up, you know, becoming an offensive coordinator that people are paying attention to before you get the Eagles gig. How different is that? Like, you can be prepped, you can have a plan, you can say, hey, I'm going to do it this way, you know, and it's not like you're being critical of the head coach that you're an assistant to, but you're probably, you know, figuring out, hey, I'd do this, I wouldn't do this. How different is it when it's real, when you're actually the guy in charge?
You know, it is, you know, I was blessed, obviously, through my career to be around some great minds in football and you know, I was in Miami with Don Shula and Gary Stevens was the offensive coordinator down there. Then I get to go to Green Bay with Mike Holmgren. And, you know, and of course that's where Andy Reid coached me as the quarterback coach there. And then I left to become a player, a quarterback with Andy, you know, in 1999 when he went to the Eagles. And, you know, and just being a quarterback and being in those rooms and being around coordinators, you kind of think a different way. And, you know, you're understanding football a little bit differently than say the running back or the receiver, right? They're paying attention to their position. But, and then I get an opportunity to coach, and I think all of those experiences kind of just added up for me. And, you know, my coaching experience in the NFL was always around Coach Reid. He hired me in Philadelphia when he was still there for 4 years. And then, you know, in Kansas City for 3 years when he first went there in 2013 and became the offensive coordinator there. But you're constantly making mental notes. You're writing things down in journals. You're if given an opportunity, it's not like you're going against, but you're just formulating your thoughts and ideas. And if ever given an opportunity to become a head coach, this is how I would do things. And you just kind of put those things down on paper, and you never know when that opportunity is going to come. And for me, it was obviously in 2016 with the Eagles. And you take a lot of what you learned over the course of your NFL career and you put all that into place and, you know, but you still have to evolve and change. And I think that's the one thing where coaches today have to really be in tune to what's going on, because, you know, you might have all these great ideas that you want to implement, but, you know, it may not be right for the time. So you got to learn to adapt. But I learned a lot of that stuff through, you know, my playing days with guys like, you know, Andy Reid and Mike Holmgren, Don Shula, those great coaches that, you know, I've had a chance to work under.
Yeah. 16, you get the gig with the Eagles, 7-9, and then 2017, you win the Super Bowl. And it's a crazy year for a bunch of different reasons, because, you know, I imagine a big part of you coming in is, hey, we've got Carson Wentz. We need to figure this out. And he's on track for being in the, I mean, he was in the MVP conversation. He's having this great season, and then full steps in, you win the Super Bowl. I mean, it's an unbelievable year. I have a Wentz theory. I may hold off on sharing with you because I understand I'm just a guy watching TV. I'll share it with you now. When I would work at ESPN, and I'm surrounded by all these guys that played in the league, and specifically the quarterbacks, and they would watch Carson, and I kept noticing he would have throws physically they were just awed by. There were just things that Carson could do, as big as everybody's arm is and all these things. They'd be like, that throw right there, I don't know who, maybe Rodgers, you know what I mean? Like Mahomes, because the arm talent, but like that throw there. And that at times would maybe blind them to, again, 17, he was clean, some of the colossal mistakes that we'll see from him at times. So my theory has been that I feel like he's so incredibly talented that you would always figure the maturity and the decision-making would evolve. And he's been better this year, but there's still those colossal mistakes. That's just always been my approach to talking about him, and that I almost had to recalibrate my expectations for him because it felt like the physical part of it was blinding so many people to who he was as a quarterback.
Well, I think there's some, you know, you make a lot of sense, you know, with what you're saying. And those are the things that I think make great quarterbacks great. The ability to go off schedule. Like you said, they got the great arm talent. They can move, they can make those off schedule throws that you see from an Aaron Rodgers or Patrick Mahomes now. And Carson can obviously make those throws. And that's what really, even when you go back to watching his college tape, you know, those are the things that jump out at you. And I'll tell you something, in 2017, I mean, he was having an MVP, probably would have been the MVP of the league if you know, he doesn't tear his knee, you know, in LA that weekend. But, you know, I think he had like 33 touchdowns and 7 interceptions, and he was really on fire and doing things well. And again, I think there's something to these young quarterbacks today that come out that sometimes feel like they can do everything. And it gets them in trouble. You're seeing a little bit maybe with Patrick Mahomes this year, the turnover ratio is kind of creeping up just a little bit, and some of those throws just aren't there. I played with a Hall of Famer in Brett Favre in Green Bay, and you talk about a guy that can sling the ball all over the place and make these unbelievable plays, but eventually in the NFL, things begin to catch up with you. And those types of plays, they just weren't coming anymore. And the ball was being incomplete or was being turned over and stuff like that. And you have to learn to adjust to the game just a little bit. And so that's where I think, as you mentioned, you talk about maturity with these quarterbacks and learning the game of football. You never want to take, and this is what I kept telling, our folks, the media in Philadelphia, you never want to take the aggressiveness away from anybody, and because that's what makes them great. And sometimes you're going to have to go through some sort of growing pains with some of these young guys until you get them to where, you want them to be. And I constantly talk about quarterbacks and evolving over time, and it does take time for them to kind of settle in. And look, Tom Brady's in his 40s now, and he's just like a well-oiled machine, and stuff like that. And Peyton Manning's and the Drew Brees's and guys that have those long careers, but they evolve to that. And I think that's where these young quarterbacks are going. It just takes time, and you got to be patient with them. But listen, he made some great plays for us in Philly, and he's going to continue to make plays in Indianapolis now. But again, it's an evolution of the quarterback position and it's changing every year. I mean, these guys are getting more talented, more athletic. Offenses are changing just a little bit. You're seeing more of the RPO game, the play action game, using their strengths, to help these teams win. And I think that's the direction in which the quarterback position is going.
I ask, coaches and players, like on the path of a great season, like you had in 17, when you kind of knew. And from what I had heard, it was you beat the Rams out in LA, you go to 11-2, and it's like, all right, you could have had a great record. But then you have to factor in the locker room of this is a really nice win. Wait, Wentz just blew out his ACL. Like, what was that like?
That was one of those bittersweet moments, and especially for me as the head coach, because I'm going in there, I want to be happy for the team. I want to be happy that we're 11-2. We just won the NFC East. We've got, at least we're in the postseason. We got a home playoff game. We were still trying to play for home field advantage. We were trying to be the number one seeded team that year in the NFC and still had three games to go. So, for me, it was that bittersweet moment. Like, how do I continue to this progression? How do we get better next week? How is the team going to respond when your starting quarterback, who is having an MVP season, is no longer out there? And this is where I really felt the veteran leadership of the football team that year really stepped up and said, it doesn't matter. It's next man up mentality. And that year, we lost Jason Peters, we lost Chris Maragos, we lost Jordan Hicks, we lost Carson Wentz, we lost Darren Sproles, all to season-ending injuries. And those were five key valuable players for us that season. And it was Halapuli Vaitivaitai stepped in at left tackle, Big V, and played and started in the Super Bowl. It was like his rookie season. And, so we had some young guys that had to come and step up. And, Nick Foles was one of those guys that stepped in. But the team, the veterans, really embraced that moment and said, we're just going to keep riding this momentum. We're going to get this thing done. And I really feel like that was kind of our turning point, as you said, for that season.
Did you, in the preparation against New England, it's a different conference. It's the Patriots' resume. It's been, we all get it. 20 years of this stuff. The awe factor of what they've been able to put together. But when you were prepping, and I know the rooms are a little different here, but did you have to kind of convince them, like, hey, this New England team's actually been pretty bad on defense this year? I mean, statistically, you may play nice in this whole thing, but of the groups of Patriots teams they've had, they've put together, had runs, like, statistically, they were near the bottom. Was there film prep where you were watching stuff going, hey, we're scoring points. We don't know if we're going to slow down Brady, but we're going to score some points today.
Yeah, the one thing with the Patriots, and this is what I've always had great respect and admiration for, Bill Belichick and his defenses, up there is they change week to week, and you know they're gonna target your top one or two offensive weapons, and they're really gonna take that strength away from, you know, from you as an offense. And honestly, what you see on defense, you know, you have to go back and watch their entire body of work. You can't just watch like their last three games or four games, because they're going to come out and show you something completely different. And that's where you have to be a little creative on offense. You have to kind of know the structure of who they are. You know, 2 weeks is a long time to prepare for them. I mean, they had 2 weeks to prepare for us too. And obviously it was one of the, you know, highest passing offensive games, I think, in Super Bowl history between the two teams. But, you know, I just knew kind of going in that too, we had to, you know, we were going to have to score every time we got the football almost, you know, but looking at them defensively, there were some things that we felt like, you know, that we were just from game planning that we were going to have to do, you know, in the run game and protection. They like to rush five guys a lot. They like to play a ton of man coverage, a lot of combo stuff, take Zach Ertz out of the game, you know, in the red zone, maybe target, you know, Alshon Jeffrey or Torrey Smith, one of those guys, you know, in the red zone. And those are all things that you don't know until you really get to the football game, you know, on how they're going to, you know, game plan you. But they've always had good defenses. They're a bend but don't break type defense. Obviously, offensively with Tom Brady, they were going to score. And that was just kind of the game plan going in.
Is it true you guys ran fake plays during walkthroughs because you're worried? I know I've read it.
We ran the Philly special and some of the other plays that we had. Yeah, in the hotel. I didn't run them at the University of Minnesota where we practiced for the week. We practiced them in Philly, obviously, in our own little world.
Right,
over there.
But the point here is there was a concern that you don't want to run any of the real stuff.
I didn't want to run any of the real stuff at the University of Minnesota. I was not going to do that. So we did all that stuff in the hotel.
for guys like, what the hell are we? Why are we running this?
Yeah, and the thing is, we ran it, and we really hit, you know, you're in a hotel ballroom, and you have no room to run any kind of play whatsoever, you know, and you're just walking through everything, and just so the guys had an understanding, and just kind of, you know, you couldn't time anything up, but you could still walk through the play. It's crazy.
All right, so Philly special
coaches get paranoid.
Okay. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, I've read about it. But so you ran Philly special in the ballroom.
We did.
And did you say, hey, we're doing this at some point?
I never really told the team that we were going to do it. I told Frank Reich that if we ever get the time, you know, the opportunity, yeah, we're going to run this play. But I never thought we were going to do it on a fourth down. Right. And it was fourth and like a yard and a half. And two, I didn't think we were going to run it at the 1 yard line or the 2 yard line. I thought this play was going to be more, you know, out in the field, maybe on a third and one, a short yardage situation, maybe a red zone play inside the 10, but never a fourth and goal at the 1.5. Did I really ever in my mind think that we were going to run that play at that time? That's why it made so much sense for me when Nick, you know, y'all hear that voice, that soundbite where Nick Foles comes over during the timeout, and he goes, you know, how about Philly? And that's when it kind of, you see me kind of raise up and pause and like, oh yeah, this is a perfect time to run that play. Even though in my mind I was thinking, you know, leading up to the game that I wasn't going to run it in that situation.
Yeah. I mean, obviously we're a little results based, but basing time, distance, and kind of with the way that game was going, it was perfect. And yeah, I've seen the NFL films clip of it. I'll start with an example here. As somebody that's hosted a lot of shows and we look at ratings and that's how we get judged. If I had a show that was doing pretty well and then a guy filled in for 2 months and the ratings went up, I'd be like, oh, I'm so happy for you. That's amazing. So everybody can be a team guy, but how much do you think Nick winning that Super Bowl messed up Carson?
You know, that's a great question. I really honestly can't answer that question because I'm not Carson, you know, at that time. I just know I saw Carson's reaction after the game. He was thrilled to death, obviously, and he was excited for the next season. He was ready. he was ready to go for 2018 and getting healthy, and he wanted to do it again. And that's, you know, Carson kept saying, he kept telling our owner, Jeffrey Lurie, and like, you know, me and Howie Roseman, like, you know, this is why I'm here, you know, is to help win championships and stuff. And, you know, he was fired up. And then the city of Philadelphia, I mean, you know, they went crazy back in Philly, you know, with the parade and, you know, and all of that. And honestly, I would probably say that it had to affect him a little bit, you know. They put a stinking, you know, statue of Nick and I up at the stadium and, you know, and stuff like that. And you know, and I just don't think you can't not think about it. Right. I mean, that's got to go through your mind just a little bit. And you know, and it's the pressure that you don't ever want to put on anybody, obviously. But Carson was the type of player. He's so confident in himself and his ability that, you know, he really wasn't going to let that affect him.
Yeah, I think it'd be weird if it didn't bother you a little bit. And I'll never forget, you know, I'm more of a New England guy, so I used to care about the Patriots a lot. And when they won that first Super Bowl, and I remember Tom slapping Drew's shoulder pads after they beat the Rams, and Tom is losing his mind. And Drew is like, oh, yeah, man.
This is great.
Yeah. Great job, Tom.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's anything other than, you know, guys being competitive. There's a line where you can be a detriment to everything. And so, you know, I just always wanted to ask you about that because
and I think too, you know, we played the Patriots in Super Bowl 31, Green Bay, New England with Drew Bledsoe was the quarterback.
That was the 96 and one?
That was the 96 season.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, Reggie White. And that was
gross. And, I remember that one.
In New Orleans. And you know, so, you know, Drew had taken a team there and, you know, he led a team. And, you know, so it might have been a little different for him, even though he didn't win the game. It's still, it's got to be a little bit crazy even for him to think about, here comes this young guy in the game, wins the game, you know, and, oh, he's, you know, obviously he probably had to affect him the same.
Yeah. Let's fast forward to a not so great year then in 2020.
Yeah.
Your last year with the Eagles. None of us can make sense. I don't know how honest you can be with me because, you know, the old rule is the way you leave is your first interview for the next place. But I don't know. A lot of us from the outside felt like it had to have been a coordinated deal with the front office for everybody to decide, like, that week 17 game against Washington. Nate Sudfeld's in after Hurts is out. You get destroyed on social media. Giants players are super mad. I didn't really think they had much of an argument. It's like, hey, you guys could have won more games. And by the fact that it was in its own slot made it that much worse. And then it felt like everybody's on the same page. People thought you were keeping your job, and then you don't have your job a week later. So what happened?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, the NFC East was a mess that whole season, you know, and all the teams were really, you know, fighting and scratching. Just, I mean, it came down to the end of the season there, obviously, to, you know, for somebody to win. We even 2 weeks to go in the year, 3 weeks to go in the season, we had a chance. If we just win like maybe two of our last three or win three of our last three, you know, we have a chance to win the NFC East and, you know, at like a 7-9 record, you know, and it's just, it was a mess. It was a mess. And you know, injuries began to pile up on our team again in 2020. You know, obviously it was a pandemic year, some things there. But, you know, it was almost a perfect storm, I guess, for us at the time. And, you know, there's really no one to blame or, you know, one person or no front office. It was everybody. I mean, we all had a hand in it and where we were, and I could have done a better job, obviously, you know, coaching and leading the football team and whatnot. And, you know, it just wasn't meant to be, I guess, you know, and these are things, and I've said this before too, like, you know, what's happened has happened. I don't ever go back and try to dwell on it and think about it because I am pushing forward and I'm looking forward to my next opportunity. And you know, I feel like I still have some good years left and still want to do that. And that's where I'm at. And it's definitely a learning experience for me. There's the whole 5 years, you know, in Philly have been a learning experience. And I know, you know, we won a Super Bowl. I know what it feels like to put a team together and make that type of run. And, you know, win the three games that we had to win in the postseason and win the Super Bowl. And I know what that feels like. I know what it feels like as a player, obviously now as a coach, and that's what I'm focused on, you know, moving forward.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm as focused on it because I guess there's no way you just were like, hey, I'm just doing this on my own, which is what you had to say. But I think I don't know how much less of an answer I'm going to get if I keep pushing on it.
you won't get much more.
So what does that mean for you now? Because with the resume, you know, you turn it around, you get a young quarterback, you get the best season we've ever seen from Carson. Everybody's trying to figure out how to pair up the next great offensive mind with the next young quarterback. You've got the Super Bowl. Like it's got to be only a matter of time, Doug, right, before you're coaching again somewhere, correct?
I mean, you know, I hope so. That's my plan, and that's what I'm focused on, you know, in 2022 coming up. And, you know, but it's not about one guy. I've said this a bunch when I was in Philly. It's not about one guy. It takes a collaborative effort. It takes, you know, three great coordinators, the head coach and GM on the same page, getting the right players in there. You know, building a roster, building a Super Bowl roster like we did in 2017 and what that looks like. And, you know, whether you have a young quarterback or a veteran quarterback to work with, just getting that person on the same page with what you're bringing in. And, you know, the other thing too is there's a lot of different offenses out there and a lot of different styles. And, you know, we won a Super Bowl in Green Bay with the West Coast, you know, system. And then I won a Super Bowl in Philadelphia with a little more of a RPO play action game, and you know, and there's all different ways to do it, and that's the beauty of our sport is it's constantly evolving, it's constantly changing, and I want to be able to bring that to, you know, to a team that gives me an opportunity and be able to lead young men and get them to buy in. That's the one thing I really appreciated about I think my time there in Philly, especially during 2020, during that last season, those players never gave up on the season. They never gave up on me as the head coach. They kept buying in. They kept practicing hard every single week. And that's a credit to them, you know, still fighting and scratching and trying to get it done. And that's, you know, and that's my hope, you know, moving forward that given another opportunity.
All right. Last thing here. I was asked to ask you this by Chris Long. Did you make him play Week 17 against Dallas that year, when it was 0 degrees, when everybody else got to rest, and you made him go out there, and he was like, I was tacking Ezekiel Elliott 0 degrees, the only guy in the defensive line rotation of the regulars out there. Is it because he would cut everybody for ice cream Saturdays? Was that punishment for? Because I know you were a big ice cream guy, correct?
I'm a big ice cream guy. Saturday night had to have my Haagen-Dazs ice cream every Saturday.
And so he said that he would line up, like he would get ready to leave the room so that he could get it first. And there's a theory there that you kept him out there to tackle guys for 70 snaps in 0 degrees.
Yeah, because he kept running out of my team meetings on Saturday night. He kept darting out. As soon as we were done, he was gone. He was bolted. So his punishment that season or that week was to play Week 17.
Did anybody go, hey, how come? Because I mean,
He didn't play. I don't think he played the whole game. I mean, my gosh, yeah. He probably played the first quarter, and then he pulled him out like all the other guys that started that game.
That's not what he said. We're going to have to go back and look at the snap count. It'll be interesting, though, because I don't know who to believe now. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe I was led astray on this one.
You know, Chris, you probably led astray just a touch.
Hey, I really appreciate the time, Doug, and look forward to what's next for you. All right. So thanks.
Hey, I appreciate it, Ryan. Thanks. Thanks again. Thanks for having me.
This episode is brought to you by Arby's, the perfect sandwich. Let me think. Buffalo chicken sandwich is done right, can change your life. I've never been the same in the best way possible when I experienced my first one. Also loving to travel, I've had gyros, also known as gyros. I think if you go to Arby's and you order a gyro, they're not going to judge you. And that's what I like about them. Nice chicken, perfectly sauced, butter lettuce, good body. You know what I'm talking about. And that's what Arby's has. They have more than you may even realize. Get out there and explore. Well, now is the chance to try Arby's and find your favorite sandwich. With a wide range of options, see for yourself that Arby's sells more than roast beef. Plus, for a limited time, Arby's Rewards members get one free sandwich with purchase every week in April online only. Simply join Arby's Rewards and order ahead today. Order on the app or Arby's.com. Before we get to life advice, lifeadvicerr@gmail.com. I was on the elliptical, not a huge cardio guy, obviously, but
whoa.
Yeah. Well, no. I do it to get warmed up. Sometimes I'll decide, hey, we're just going to stay on this. You're going to punish yourself for a little while. I'm like, all right, cool. That was me talking out loud about how I talk to myself when I'm on it. And then I noticed the morning shows again. I don't watch any of these shows. I don't think I'm the target audience that they're looking for. And I think we have brought this up again, but I cannot tell you how convinced I am that that would be, of all the stuff that's available to somebody that does what I do, and not that I'm available to a national morning show. I'm never going to be on those shows. I don't want to be on those shows. I would suck at it so bad. I would be the worst. I just don't know how you have somebody come in who writes a book that you're not interested in and you talk about how interested in it. I don't know how you do it. I guess the money is really good because the money's insane. If you become a franchise on one of those shows, the money is absolutely through the roof. I've told the story before. Josh Elliott, I was like, why do you want to be on those shows? And then he told me how much money everybody made. And I was like, oh, okay. And then his car service picked us up and brought us to a restaurant. And I was like, all right, well, okay. I get this part of it. But I mean, you know me, Cerruti, and obviously Kyle, I've worked with you for a while now. I just, as much as I'm somebody who's done this media stuff for like 20 years, I never once lied to myself and looked at that and said, ah, maybe you could pivot to that. And then I've certainly taken on that personality too. It would be the worst. It would be one of the worst like fits of anybody that's in an industry, if that makes any sense.
I think actually it would be funny though, to do, it would be like counter programming for people like us who don't watch morning television because of that reason. But to put somebody like you on there to be like, oh yeah, Ryan's going to like, you know, fight back on the bullshit. But if you're doing true Today Show, like, hey, here's somebody who has a new pottery collection at Target and you have to interview them about it, like there's a good chance that interview is not going to go great for you.
That was a great example. Yeah. And be like, so what's going on here? So the bowls, oh, these are, what is it? Reharvested
handcrafted
materials?
But yeah. Interesting. I mean, you are a big restoration hardware guy. So like, I guess you can't really rule anything out, but you know,
true.
but I don't know. Like, I think, it would be good to do a week. Like I remember talking about this during, like remember when like Mike and Mike was kind of, they were trying to figure out what was next. Right. And you'd always kick around like, hey, well, how would you do on a morning show like that, where you kind of have to be more generic? Like you're probably not watching as many games. And I always thought like you would be miserable. Like you would hate your life because you wouldn't be able to do the show you wanted to do. You'd have to, everything would be like skim surface, bare minimum stuff. And you'd be miserable. Even if you were making great money, you would complain every day. And I don't think it would be worth it.
Complain every day. There'd be a number of sports morning show that I would have made it work. But yeah, not watching games. And you know, anybody that's ever done those morning shifts, like what time would you go in when you were on Mike and Mike?
Oh, like I would wake up at 3 and I'd probably get in at like 4:15, 4:30, depending on if it was a good day or not. Yeah.
Yeah. When I did the morning show, I in Boston, I was up at 3:30, usually, you know, there 4-ish, 4:15. I mean, because that was me actually being freaked out that I wouldn't be able to prep, but I would go to bed at 12:31, nap for a few hours, and then I'd work until like 12. I'd work out and have lunch, and then I'd go home and I'd sleep from like 1 or 2 to 6. That's so every day was 2 days, and I hated it. I hated it, especially like being in my 20s. It was the worst because I just, you know, when you're by yourself, like I remember sitting there going, if I'm going to do this, if I'm actually going to be a morning show guy long term, like I may have to get married because I'm just afraid I'm not going to work. Like I was like, maybe I just get married and stuff because like there's no way I'm ever. And then if I went out on a Friday, I just was like on fumes for that whole time. And that was terrible. And luckily that show only lasted 3 months because I remember one time I had a panic attack at like 6 o'clock at night. I woke up at 6 o'clock at night and whatever the sunlight was, wherever the moon and stars were positioned, I thought it was 6 a.m. And I called the co-host freaking out, being like, I'm so sorry. I'll be there in a second. I'm out the door. And he was like, dude, what is wrong with you? It's 6 o'clock at night. I was like, oh, okay. No problem.
I'm just scrolling through like the Today Show Twitter feed to see what the top, because I don't even know. I'm with
what's
you.
Today?
I'm just, it's not
what's
in my the, thing. It's a lot of Adele. A lot of Taylor Swift.
Those two,
so
girl power. Those two.
You're probably out on that. What else do we have? There's a new Downton.
How about weather?
New Downton Abbey sequel.
What about weather?
Weather. You could see me doing weather, Kyle?
I could see me doing weather, unless this is all about you.
Well, if it can be about you, the weather guy, because now you've got my interest. Go for it.
Well, so here's what I would say to you is there's something called Small Town News. I don't know if you're an HBO Max subscriber. I imagine you are. It's called KVPM Pahrump, and it's this guy who does an independent news station in Pahrump, Nevada. And just it's absolutely fantastic. It's a documentary. It's one season. But the weather guy is like the wife of somebody who is like has seven jobs, and he's the husband. That's what I mean. The weather guy is the husband of this lady who has like seven jobs, and he shows up. He wears shorts every day and a suit top, and he's funny. He's actually funny in like a weird dad embarrassing sort of way. And I just think that he doesn't like care about all the bullshit stories that run on the news. He's just trying to make the weather funny, and that's what I like. I think anybody could be successful at that job. Imagine if just instead of like a put together guy or gal in the morning, it's like a guy who's like a little bit stout. He's funny. He's got like a little, it reminds you of like Hank Schrader a little bit from Breaking Bad. And he's just like, just making the weather funny. Don't you think that would be a massive hit? All right.
You got to tweak it a bit. No, I think you touched on something though that, you know, because both, whatever lane, you know, whether it's CNN or Fox News, like it's very clear these last 5 years, you just, both sides went all in on whatever their side was. And I'm surprised somebody hasn't just decided to like, we need to figure out a way to make something that can say, hey, there probably really wasn't much Russian interference in 2016, but there also wasn't a stolen election in 2020. Like, and it'd be like, no way, you guys, those are your positions. On Twitter, like, do you understand you're not allowed to actually say those things, you know? And so, you know, maybe like if you had Enes Kanter on, you wouldn't intro him as a great defender on the court and also off the court, you know, like depending on whatever message you're trying to send. So anyway, now I'm off of my own independent news channel startup idea, but I'm not that a million people haven't thought of this already, but then you'd be held to the standard where the minute you sort of dipped left or right, then everybody'd be like, oh, you guys, you might as well just go all in on the other side of it.
Well, Taibbi gets in trouble with that. Like people try to put him in like a box, even though I kind of feel like he is that guy. And I thought he was a great interview on the show. I follow him now and he's awesome, but people want to put him in a box based on whatever thing he writes most recently. And, you know, I think he's trying to, you know, mostly shooting it straight.
Yeah, but you know what? After we had him on, and I love all of his stuff, and I read it, there's a lot of people that I like that were like, nah, he's decided to be the call-out guy to the left now. That's his thing. And they're convinced of it. And I was kind of surprised how many people said that with Taibbi that actually really like Taibbi. They're like, nah, he just decided to kind of actually pick a lane now, and his lane is like the non-lane. And I was like, oh, all right, okay.
Getting back to Kyle's idea, though, really quickly.
Yeah, yeah, back to Kyle.
Because the weather thing blows my mind. Who still watches TV for the weather? Like, locals. I know there are a lot of old people, but like my parents have phones. If I'm like, hey, what's the weather going to be like next week? It's a dying industry. So, but I guess it's not. Maybe it's not. Like, is weather not a big thing?
It's not for the weather. It's the treat of this guy or this girl. Like, hey, we like her. You know what I mean? And a lot of times I think the weather and the traffic people are like, they're just kind of waiting for the next job to open up, right? They're like, I'm on at 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. You guys see me every day. Please give me a better job, right? Isn't that what it is?
I don't know. Cause in Connecticut, at least, like the local weather guys, they've been there for years.
Legends,
I mean,
OGs.
Yeah. They get the Doppler radar going whenever there's a big storm, like it's their Doppler. Super Bowl. And that's like their thing. So I don't know.
Yeah, the weather guy in Hartford, he just shows up to the Russian lady after an 11 o'clock hit and leaves the cocktail waitress after 15 minutes. And he goes up to her, he's like, you don't work here anymore. And then they leave.
I don't know. What's up? The KCAL 9 people are like, they'll be like the weekend. Somebody's just like, I'm not coming in this weekend. And they'll be like the weekend second person at the desk. And it's like, there you go. I'm actually happy. Like you're now moving up to the Saturday 5 o'clock. Good for you.
All right. First of all,
somebody decided they weren't coming in.
The weather thing is huge local. It just is. And I don't know how it works now, but I almost took the local anchor gig in Burlington, Vermont when I was 26. So I interned there in 99 when I was 23. And then I was interning there while also managing a bar, which is a pretty neat trick. And so I get done, I do the 6 and I do the 11, which again, I wasn't on air. I would tape beta, double tap, edits. So then they started letting me write scripts a little bit. And I thought I wanted to be an anchor. And after I worked with the anchors, and I liked them all, they're all great to me, don't get me wrong. But I was like, maybe I don't want to do this because I'm a little more opinionated or whatever. I don't know. I just want to work in sports at that point because I didn't think I had any other passions. And Kyle, to your point, the weather part locally, I have to imagine it's still the same. I imagine there's places in the country where weather is still like the most important thing. And I don't know if they've pivoted to high school coverage too with sports, feeling like, okay, we're going to do national stories here. We'll do our local Major League Baseball team or basketball, NFL, that whole deal. We have to. But even the LA stuff here, they have some studio shows that probably do pretty well. There's probably more studio shows out here in LA than I realized that are sports central. But the local part of it, I think there's some people, guys, that just love their community, that love the idea of, I don't think I would have lasted, and I can't fathom me being on air at 26 in Burlington where I went to college, but I wanted the gig, and then I thought I was going to get it, and then they were like, oh, they didn't even tell me that I didn't get it, and then I called them, was like, hey, what's going on? They're like, oh, we gave it to somebody else. You'd been on air before, and I was like, yeah, all right, well, obviously. I think that guy might still be there, too.
It's a prestige job, dude. Burlington, Vermont, come on.
So you... Do you guys get that, though, that some people grow up and they actually just love their community so much that that's it for them? Like, they're not constantly trying out, Kyle, for the next weather gig. They're just thrilled to be on in Cincinnati and have a life there, which actually, in a weird way, is probably, it's probably a little happier because you just kind of go, this is it, and I'm okay with it, instead of constantly going, what's the next step, which is what other people do.
I mean, somebody's, and it goes both ways, the community too. Somebody's still sending pictures of their pets in and still shouting out their kids' birthdays for Fridays. Like, somebody's taking the time to email that to the station. So, you know, there should be somebody at the station who's taking the time to read it with purpose. So I agree. Small Town News, HBO, check it out.
Are you trying to get a gig at that station, perhaps? Is this
no,
a leverage
I'd really just want you to watch it because I think you'll just have some opinions. I think it'll be great.
I know what it is. I haven't watched it, so I'm on.
Oh, God, so good.
So, Rudy?
I'm with you on the community thing, but
I don't think you are. I think you I think you look at local news and you're like, what's wrong with you?
I do. I mean, I'll be honest. Like, and then people are going to be like, you're a dick. I don't know. I don't care. I wrote my first job out of college. I was associate producer for a local station in Connecticut. And it was nice people, but it was the most miserable job I've ever had because we're covering like cat Halloween parties, it's like local town elections, it's like, it's just stuff that, like, I'm like, who cares about this stuff? Nobody cares. And then the weather, I'm just like, I could just look at my phone. Why what's the need for this thing? But you're right, people want to feel part of a community, and I guess maybe I'm not part of a community, right? I'm on my own. I've done too much national stuff too, like I'm too much too soon.
I'm
too
big
picture guy. Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
You know what I think we just thought of here though is the Cerruti Ringer spinoff podcast called You're a Dick, where Cerruti tells you all these things that people like that he doesn't
that
like.
That are dumb.
He's just not into it.
Oh, that's dumb.
give me your three movies that people love that you think suck because they don't hold up. Just as a sampling of You're a Dick, episode one.
Titanic is always the one I'm like, that movie's terrible. What
Shawshank?
Else?
Do you think Shawshank sucks?
No, I like Shawshank. Come on. You know, I have taste, dude. Come on. Man, off the top of my head, it's always been that. What else is terrible? Fast and Furious. Every Fast and Furious movie's terrible, period. The Rock, like, I like The Rock. I'm sure he's great. I'm not a big wrestling guy, but like, those movies are just, who watches these movies? Come on. What are we doing? And I realize I probably alienated like most of the Ringer staff right now because there are probably many think pieces about Fast and Furious movies, but I'm sorry, guys. Like, I just don't get it.
Kyle, will you?
That's good. That was like 9 movies. He asked you for 3 and you just took down the franchise. So I think you above and beyond.
All right, let's do some life advice. Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply. This episode is brought to you by Netflix. Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Seven-time world champion and modern-day legend Tom Brady, the greatest of all time, finally gets roasted. Hosted by Kevin Hart, Tom Brady gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night when everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live. Only on Netflix.
You want details? Bye. I drive a Ferrari 355 Cabriolet. What's up? I have a ridiculous house in the South Fork. I have every toy you can possibly imagine. And best of all, kids, I am liquid. So, now you know what's possible. Let me tell you what's required.
LifeAdviceRR@gmail.com. All right. Pro athlete wedding. Ooh, exciting. All right, 6'5", 210, self-labeled as hot. I love it. Love the confidence here. My fiance's college roommate, all right, so his fiance, her roommate, is getting married to a professional athlete in the spring. I've met him a few times, and he's super nice, down-to-earth guy. A ton of his teammates will be at the wedding, including one of his best friends, who is a dude all of us would want to party with. All right, so again, his fiance, roommate from college, marrying a pro athlete. He's got a ton of his teammates there. And I guess one of them is like an all-time guy. Look, I am more self-aware than the 23-year-old LA rich kid who thought he was going to be best friends with Melo. That poor kid, can you actually send us a follow-up email? Because sorry that everybody hated you on the podcast. I'm going to now pivot. I have a lot of interest in the Melo friendship path. So please send us a follow-up email because everybody emails about you guys constantly all the time. And I hope you're undeterred with all the hate. But all right, so back to this. More self-aware than those guys. I understand that I'm not going to develop a lifelong friendship with these guys, but it would be an incredible experience to tear it up for a weekend with a bunch of famous athletes. As each of you has spent extended time around athletes, famous people in the past, I could use your help in my approach. What is my play here? P.S. Kyle, you're a legend. Love this one. I'll start with Kyle on this. Kyle, how do you handle it when you're around one of those big time guys?
Well, I'm not around those big time guys often. And,
yeah, you still are though, a little bit. John Hamm.
I'd be in the same. Yeah, that's my story is John Hamm and then Walt Goggins. That's my stories. And I said it exactly. I didn't forget anybody. I didn't leave anybody out. Those two. So I guess I would just play. I guess how is he? Can you just run this by me one more time? How is he wants to hang out with them again?
I think he wants to be able to hit it off with them where they leave, potentially wanting to be friends with this guy.
Fuck.
And that's a tough one.
How famous too? How
famous? Well, it sounds like one of these guys is a big time. He didn't put the name in. Some guys will put the name in so I know who it is, but then keep it private from everybody else and I won't read it. He didn't put the name in there. I think the way he's setting it up is, I don't know. Imagine if. Now, Brady's a bad example because Brady's like a superhero, you know? I'm trying to think.
We're talking like backup quarterback level? Taylor Heineke?
No. He's saying that one of the friends of the boyfriend and all the teammates, right, that one of the guys from that team is a big, big deal. That's what he's insinuating here, right?
So is he like sharking this one guy or is he like literally anybody from the team I'd be happy with? Or is he like, I need the linebacker that's like a pro bowler to hang out with me,
I think he's simply saying he's going to be with these guys and he wants to fit in and he wants it to be cool. All right.
Oh, yes. This is so easy then.
All right. Yes. Yes.
Why the fuck am I taking so long?
I have no idea what's happening to this podcast.
Oh my
today,
God.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh man. I mean, just roll with it, right? I mean, don't be too eager and just like take a temperature and then maybe have one more beer than you were hoping if they're that type of guy and then be like, hey, this guy's keeping up. Right. And then, I don't know, maybe bring a weed pen in case it seems like it's going down that road and you're like, hey, look, I got a weed pen. I don't know.
What is up with today?
Don't take any pictures and don't take any videos. That's the only thing.
Look at all pretty good advice. The weed pen was aggressive, but, you know, be prepared. So, Kyle, to recap, weed pen, maybe a couple extra Reebs, and then I think your no picture thing is right on. Because I invited a buddy to a party that Sean McVay was at. And the second he showed up, he went to McVay to get a pick. And McVay was so nice that McVay was kind of like, whatever. And the guy hosting the party was super pissed immediately. And I was like, bad move. All right. So don't do the picture thing. If this guy's that famous, which is the kind of famous where when people see him, he constantly can see that people are seeing him all the time. And he's been able to figure out. He's going to be able to tell in your eyes immediately kind of what kind of hang you're going to be. All right. So if you're really excited and you're sort of looking forward to this and you're going to make the intro and whatever, you have to slow play it. You have to be cool. You have to start practicing your eye contact moves as if you're almost detached, not with all of this anticipation. Because once he sees these super excited, anticipating eyes, he's going to be like, all right, this guy, whatever. You want to order around? All right, order around for some of the guys. Wedding, you're probably not paying for it anyway. Not a big deal. See if you can get into the conversation that avoids talking about sports. More often than not, guys always like to say, hey, you know, what I liked about him is we don't always talk about sports all the time. We'll talk about what's going on with our families. We'll talk about some of these other things. I mean, I don't know how, if you're expecting to have like lifelong friendship with this guy, we'll get to that in a second. You could research a couple things, but then this is like getting really weird here. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure. But like, hey, you know what I'm interested in is startups, but in the consumer, direct consumer space, subscription stuff, because you know that he is. All right. So then that would try a little too hard. But then there's the Wade Boggs of the world who only wanted to talk about hitting and only wanted to talk about sports the one time I hung out with him. All he wanted to do was actually be recognized and talk baseball with everybody, which was actually incredible because he was so accommodating. He was so friendly. Everybody really liked him. He was really nice. He wasn't having a good time until people started talking with him about being Wade Boggs. So some guys don't want to be Wade Boggs. And then some guys are like, I just want to tell you that I'm Wade Boggs the entire time, right? That's the Wade Boggs approach to the whole thing. But I would make this a point. All right. You might be hot and 6'5 and 200 pounds, and your fiance is roommates with the girl getting married. So this is a wedding you're very, very close to. But I can tell you from experience and kind of, you know, floating in and out of some of these circles, I may be fun. I may be cool. And here I am in my own little life, successful. And, you know, I'm not a zero that comes to the group. But if these guys are all on the same team and they've had memories and they've traveled and they've been in locker rooms and they know each other from colleges and different camps and all this shit, that is such a tight circle that you're actually not going to penetrate it. You're not. Because these guys, if they're all like tier one friends, all from the same team, they've had these memories and these experiences together where they don't even need a new guy. All right. First of all, so that's working against you. And even if your joke timing is great, observational stuff, not too mean, but funny, a couple good comments here or there, get around, they get you around, you're putting your arms around. Maybe you're even taking pictures, right? Maybe you're even at that level. There's still a very good chance that you are only an outsider to that group because you're not a pro athlete, even though you're hot at 6'5". You know what I mean? Like I can sit and hang with guys. But when I'm not somebody that went through the wars with these players and was in the clubhouse, was in the locker room, you know, all these different things, there's just going to be a separation that I can't ever make up for. All right. There's just going to be a little bit of a separation at this event. Now, long-term neighborhood, kids in school and all that kind of stuff, that's a completely different path and plan and chart. We don't have time for that one today. But for a wedding, the best thing is to find yourself being a side guy, because if you try to out alpha a lot of these guys, it's weird because they are always the alphas. So if you're a big time alpha, you're going to have to beta it up a little bit. But don't have such high expectations that you can be getting a summer house with this guy on Monday.
Anything what was your origin story for your friendship with Chris Long? Because Chris, it's funny because Chris is, and obviously like you're famous and like, so he knows that. So that's part of like your in, but he's also a guy who like, you know, he's like the best looking girl at the dance, right? Like Chris has a ton of friends. Everybody loves Chris. Like he doesn't need new friends, but you were able to penetrate and infiltrate sort of his inner circle. How did you do that? Because I mean, maybe people could take something from that advice.
That one was different though, because actually he and Van Pelt were like, drive-through BFFs. So if they were at an event together, Van Pelt would seriously be like, I'm going to go hang out with Chris Long. And I was like, what's the story with this guy? Be like, you have no idea. He's the best. He's the best. He's the best, right? And then in the divorce, I got him somehow. Because I don't think Scott was as interested in maintaining the relationship once he had a family. And then I was asked to come down and host his Water Boys Foundation thing. So then I hung out with him and then all of his guys in Seaville for the night, and that kind of like was like, oh, Russillo's, you know, just like us. And then I did it again. I hosted it, and then it just, I don't know, we're very alike in a lot of ways. So I think that had more to do with it than I didn't work it in a certain way, or he didn't work.
You didn't research Chris Long before you met him that time.
No, we definitely like came to this conclusion that we see a lot of the things the same way. And then he also wanted to get into podcasting, so he'd be asking about that while he was still playing. The funny thing is, he played for the Pats. I didn't go visit him once. I didn't go to a game. The only time I almost stopped by his house was when I was home for Christmas and I ended up having to leave early, and I was on Christmas Day driving through Southern Mass, and I was like, hey, are you guys, this is weird, it's Christmas Day. And he's like, oh, you should have just stopped by. And I was like, yeah, whatever. Now the story's getting really long. But yeah, that was it. It was also weird for me to have a friend that much later. And I'll admit too, I think there was even a time where I thought I was on the outs with Chris Long, where I was like, maybe we peaked and it's over now. I think we're good now. All right. Let's see here. What else? I don't know. Wife's, you guys up for a wife swap one? Maybe we'll save that for a Friday.
Thanks. Yeah.
I'd have to read up on wife swaps before.
Hey, you know what, Kyle? There's your homework assignment. Read up on wife swaps and then let us know what you think on Friday.
All right. And your small town news and on wife swaps. Got it.
Okay. I know it's in here somewhere. We had a lot of people chiming in about the compulsive liar, which again, we appreciate. We appreciate some of that feedback. There's some really good stuff, but I don't think I'm going to share it.
Was there a leaning sentiment left or right? Was it, yeah, it's funny, or no, it's gross?
A lot of people just kind of chimed in about their own guy. Then somebody got really serious with it and said, it could be some traumatic thing that happened when he was younger. And I was like, you know what?
Oh, yeah. Don't ruin life advice, guy.
I know. Honestly, I think we may have even touched on that, though. So, all right. This one just sucks. I'm going to just read this one because it sucks and it's stupid. Hey, 6'1", 170, big lifter in high school. Awesome. Bench 250, big lifter. Avoided the weight room. Oh, wait, 170, 250 in high school? That's a huge number. Good for you, man. Can't get 185 now. Avoided it since high school. All right. I'm sorry that I was disparaging when he said big lifter after saying 250, but when I realized it was 170 and in high school to put up 250, that's a big, big deal. You should tell more people about that. Make a shirt. All right. So my friends and I were at this bar this past weekend, and I don't drink alcohol, but I always make up for it by ordering food. I would never be the guy at the table ordering nothing. So I usually order wings, mott sticks, et cetera. We get to the bar and I order a plate of wings. The bar is not very crowded, but it's somewhat full. I went to the bartender who was cleaning glasses and I asked her for water. She rolls her eyes, gets a cup of water, and says, the worst part about being a bartender is getting water for people like you. Now, usually the worst thing about being a bartender is jumping over the bar and trying to break up a fight and a guy putting a cigarette out in your arm. I would suggest that's worse than pouring a water for somebody. Very taken aback, I say, great, I'll take my water now. Later, my friend goes up to the bar and she snaps and says, do you want a water too? My friend confused says, no, I want a rum and coke. Much later in the night, a third friend goes to the bar and order a drink from the other bartender. The first bartender rolls her eyes and exclaims, careful, it's probably just another water. Were you guys at Dick's Last Resort and you didn't get it? What the hell is going on here? By the way, do you guys know Dick's Last Resort? Kyle definitely does. You probably get a membership card.
No, I like her water jokes throughout the night. Careful, we got a water guy over here. Chris Long and the Water Boys coming through for a meeting.
Imagine if she had said to the fourth guy, you guys drilling wells or what? wait, so you like her? Do you guys know what Dick's Last Resort is?
No, I'm gonna look.
No, nah, I think I've heard of it, but no.
All right.
Is that a dangerous Google search?
Or no. It's a chain of. I don't even know how many there are anymore. But the point is that the people are rude to you on purpose. And my buddy Sully didn't know when he went to the one in Boston. And I think every one of us, 20-something deep, went to Dick's Last Resort maybe that one time. That was about it. It was not a go-to. It wasn't like, hey, all right, we'll start at Dick's again, and then we'll make it over to Sonsy. No. So he was there, and he ordered two drinks, and the guy, didn't put straws in. I don't even know why I'd want the straw or something. And he's like, oh, look at this guy. He's got to sip it. He's going to sip it with his straw. Couple straw guy over here. And then my friend was like, what? And then he leaves the tip. He's like, oh, $4. I'm like, I might retire now. And my friend didn't know that's the whole deal. So he was like, hey, $4 is a good tip.
Wait, none of his friends told him the deal?
None of his friends told him. He didn't know. So he's mad. He's like, fuck this guy. He's like, no, this is bullshit. He's like, he doesn't give me any straws. And then I guess the other time is if you would ask for straws, they would take like 30 of them and put them in your drink at the same time. And then like the liquor would spill out. And like that was the routine. I don't know if we have anybody in the PR. Can you look up Dick's Last Resort, what the nearest locations are? Maybe we'll do a field trip for it. So
I saw a lot of Vegas. I looked it up. It seemed like a heavy in Vegas.
Heavy in Vegas. People just love going there and getting bad service.
Two in Las Vegas.
Looks like there's only about a dozen total. So I don't know if they've had a decline recently.
I think it's just a tough business model. I think it's especially if a lot of people don't get it. You know, some people don't know.
Right. So then like another bartender pulled my friend aside. I was like, hey, it's kind of the point. I think it's our deal. Anyway, so my point of this email was it would be hilarious if this guy didn't realize he was at a Dick's Last Resort and sent an email in. The guy says with this, I've ordered water at bars 1,000 times in my life. Never had this reaction before. We want to go back to this bar. But this is how I'm going to be treated for ordering water. I'll find a different place. Is this normal? How would you handle someone ordering water at the bar? I'm not going to tell you I was the happiest bartender at all times, especially towards the end of the night. But somebody doing this to you is an asshole. I mean, it's just, this is a her problem. This is not a you problem. I would tell you most bartenders would not handle it this way. I remember I worked at that dance club in Oak Bluffs, like on the really, really busy dance nights. The water thing could get a little out of hand because people just didn't want to pay for drinks on Martha's Vineyard sometimes. And it would just be water, water, water. So we started putting out pitchers and then people got really mad. I think one bartender I do remember saying, hey, we have rusty pipes, which was a lie because he was just so mad. He was so mad about, because like dance, some of the dance crowd isn't really a drinking crowd. I mean, you know, sometimes it is, but sometimes it isn't. Hmm. And so we'd have some of these dance specific nights where we knew it wasn't a very good shift because it wasn't a heavy drinking night. And the vineyard hours were so weird back then anyway, because you would open at 9, no one would get there till 10:30, and then last call is 12:30, and they were strict about it. So it was like this 2-hour window. And so some of the bartenders would get really mad about it. But back to the email, I mean, I'm just telling stories here left and right. I'm not even sure how interesting any of them are anymore. This person's just an asshole to you, you know? So if you want to go there again, I mean, I hate how often we're like, hey, just order from somebody else. Just order from somebody else. Or you can even do this. You know, seriously, most bartenders would be like, this guy's awesome. You'd be like, hey, look, I don't drink, which is bullshit if you don't drink and then somebody's treating you poorly because you don't want to drink. Like, that's just messed up to begin with. Go up to the other bartender and say, hey, look, we were in here. He's like, we just ordered waters. I don't drink. And here's $5. You know, throw it in the tip jar. It's just, I'm going to order a couple of waters from you tonight. You shouldn't have to do any of those things, by the way. But the fact that you would do it, any bartender who's like a good seasoned guy, girl, who's been doing it a long time is going to be like, you know what? That was really, really cool. That's why I tip at an open bar, even if there's no tipping.
Totally.
At the beginning of anything, I will always tip. And knowing that it's I'm not going to pay for a drink the entire night. Go, hey, here's $20. I just want to make sure somebody's taking care of you, whatever. And it is one of the best investments you can make at a wedding or any kind of function or any of that kind of stuff, because now that person's looking out for you because nobody else is doing that kind of stuff. So when you do little stuff like that with a bartender, it ends up paying. And in this case, you shouldn't have to do any of those things. Most people listen to this and say, fuck her, never go back there. Never go back there. But if it's someplace that you actually kind of want to go and you don't want to be treated like that by her, instead of even getting into it with her, make her look like the fool by doing something really cool to the other guy. And it's going to cost you $5 and it's going to be worth way more than that. So, all right.
What I was going to say. Drop a 20 on the bar at the end of the night and be like, sorry for the major inconvenience. Be super sarcastic about it to make her feel bad about treating you like a dick. That's what I would have done.
Wow.
But I also don't know. So you're supposed to tip for waters. Is that a thing?
No,
you said no or
no,
yes?
No, no. No, you shouldn't. You shouldn't be.
Because I was a couple weekends ago, I was in Boston and I was DDing. I was driving home. It was the night my friend puked in my car. Good times. I ordered some couple soda waters at the end of the night, and I just didn't know. I didn't know. I kind of felt weird.
If you want to leave a buck or two, you could. But look, if you're pounding soda waters all night and staring like a lurker in the corner, and you're on soda water and you haven't left a dollar, like, you can expect that guys are doing shit to your soda waters now, because like that's not, there's a line, like everything, right? There's no absolutes for almost everything. And, you know, there's a difference between end of the night, I want to water it out here a little bit, especially if you've been a customer with all your friends and all this. And the other thing too, the guy like clearly cares. He ordered food. He feels bad about this whole thing. Your $20 thing to show her up, most people are probably going, screw her. Don't give her $20 on top of everything else just to prove some sort of point. So you can make the $5 point in the beginning the next time you go ahead and do it. But yeah, I mean, there's a number of waters in your behavior. And if you've never ordered a drink and you go to a place, like we had guys that would start doing that because they were older guys that would come to our dive that wanted to look at college girls the whole time. And then you're like, okay, so you're ginger ale guy and you think you're going to get free ginger ales to lurk? Like, nah. Like, yeah. Eventually those guys expose themselves and clearly that's not what you're doing, we think.
No, come on, dude. I was being responsible, DD.
I know. No, you're a very responsible guy. I think we covered it today. So yeah. I don't want to keep adding to this. This was three guys chopping it up quite a bit today on a Monday. So we'll pivot. College football heavy on Wednesday and NBA stuff as well. And it looks like our good friend Tom Rinaldi, America's best friend, is going to join us on the show. I can't wait to talk to that guy. He makes you feel better just by saying his name out loud. Thanks to Kyle and Steve. Talk to you Wednesday.